My name is Larry Norris. I'm the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature and the National Organizing Director. I also run a nonprofit called Entheogenic Research, Integration Education, very interested in integration work. So I'm sure we'll have some great conversations with Julie about that a little later as well. And I've had the privilege of being able to help a lot of teams across the US pass local policies. So if you are interested in your local area and you want to pass policy, please reach out to us at decriminalizednature.org. We have a brand new website all up and running now, re-updated. And we do orientations once a month on the last Tuesday of the month. So reach out and we can get you started. I'm thrilled to co-host this Decriminalized Nature podcast with other board members as well. We had two new board members that came on, Reggie Harris and Ben Manton. And so they'll be also doing some podcasts with Mudu and Shane in terms of hosting. So we'll keep an eye out for that in the future. And I'd also like to introduce our behind-the-scenes maverick, Rachel. So thank you, Rachel, for being here and helping us out, getting the production going. Rachel will be, really instrumental in putting this out on our live podcast as well as on Spotify. And then we're going to go, I think next week we'll have a much broader range. We're going to do an RSS feed and all things that you probably don't really care too much about, but we're going to have this on a bigger space, including possibly YouTube Live in the future. So thank you, Rachel, for helping us out with that and being, a stalwart and being here every time. Appreciate that. Rachel will also be answering any questions you have towards the end. So if you have any questions or comments, please put that in the chat box. And around 10 minutes before the end of the show, Rachel will be asking the questions for Julie and myself. Our guest today, really excited to have Julie Barron. Julie Barron has done so many things. Her resume is so long, so I'll only answer or respond to a few of them. But it's really a pleasure to be here, a friend for a long time. Julie is the organizer of the Michigan Psychedelic Society, co-founder of Decriminalized Nature Ann Arbor and Decriminalized Nature Michigan. She's also previously a board member on the Decriminalized Nature National Board, co-founder of Entheofest, and founder of Blue Sage. She's a therapist and an advocate for entheogenic plants and fungi, and I've been honored to know Julie and work with her for many years. Also originally from Michigan, so have that Michigan love back there. So really excited for you to be here. How are you doing today, Julie?
Hi, Larry. I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. I feel very at home in the Restoring Our Roots podcast, as I have a deep history with Decriminalized Nature. And happy to be here with you guys.
Awesome. Yeah, great. So maybe we could start off with like a little background, a little bio. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came across this sort of area of expertise and anything you'd like the audience to know, and we'll go from there.
Okay. I have really been interested in non-ordinary states of consciousness since I was young. I started using plant medicine as a teenager and really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. Not having a good understanding or framework for using them at that point, really kind of using them to have fun and explore and be with friends. I think at times it got a little imbalanced because I didn't really have a framework for it and somebody wasn't helping me through the processing and, the integration and the preparation and all of that kind of stuff. And so I think my relationship with psychedelics or really medicines in general has gone through times of being in more balance and then not being in balance. And so it's interesting as I learn from that. But I went to University of Michigan, got a psychology undergrad, and then I found myself making my way to Boulder, Colorado to go to Naropa University. At the time I started, it was called Naropa Institute. That's how long ago it was. It was in the 1990s. But I studied transpersonal counseling, psychology, and music therapy, and I got a master's degree in those. And what an incredible learning experience and training for me. It was really just outstanding. And I focused some of my work at that point in non-ordinary states of consciousness, doing some trainings with holotropic breath work, and using music and trance states in music to work within that non-ordinary state. And of course, we talked a lot about psychedelics, and I had my own psychedelic experiences happening and have happened at that point. But we weren't doing formal training in that specifically. So life went on. I stayed in Colorado for a couple decades, and I came back to Michigan. I had a really hard adjustment coming back to Michigan. Not as much by choice I returned back here, but I really needed to lean on my family. And I came back here and I went through a couple years of things being really challenging. And I brought plant medicine back into my life in a very different way than I ever have before. Really focused on healing, focused on growth. And it was really shown to me at that time that as I was, you know, starting my work all over again in a new state, that I really wanted to focus on psychedelic preparation and psychedelic integration. And so I started doing that. I started seeing clients and helping people. But one of the things that I realized really early on was that the individual work I was doing with clients was really just a small fraction of what was needed. And so I ended up building Michigan Psychedelic Society in 2017 as a place for community to get together to have the discussions about psychedelics. I would have clients come see me just to talk about psychedelics. They didn't even know anyone in their life they could have that conversation with. And a lot of my clients were just very isolated. This was prior to COVID, right? There was just really severe isolation going on. And I could just see this vision of this like really lovely community space where people can come in and talk about themselves in a really authentic way. People showing up in very different ways than other community groups that I had seen or other ways of getting people together. And so we formed Michigan Psychedelic Society, and that really just blossomed. You know, we had 30 people come to our first meeting, and we were doing two meetings a month in Lansing and Ann Arbor. And it was such a lovely, lovely thing. We started talking about doing some legislative work or, you know, working to decriminalize or change some laws. And we started Decriminalize Nature Ann Arbor. What we had seen was what Decriminalize Nature Oakland had done. And when we were looking for where do we want to go? What do we want to do? Right? Like there's so many different models we could potentially use to start to make entheogens more accessible for our community. And when we found Decriminalized Nature Oakland, it really fit on all ways around with what we wanted, what our ethos was. And it was open source. And so we really quickly built a wonderful relationship with Larry. And he really helped us through that process pretty closely. We had great success and we moved on to other cities and, you know, a statewide movement. That was kind of the trajectory. Michigan Psychedelic Society continues to be a community nonprofit organization, and we do a lot of stuff throughout the state, but there's plenty of others around at this point in time. So we're not like the sole community group. And so our roles have shifted a little bit. I have done less political advocacy work in the past couple of years, but maybe starting to rebuild that a little bit now. That's kind of the overall. I know I missed some pieces, but that was a pretty long background.
That's great. Thank you for that. Yeah. There's so much that I want to like touch on too in terms of what you mentioned. So we'll just go one little bit piece at a time. We'll get to the policy last because I know that's something that I think a lot of the audience here also wants to kind of hear about a little in terms of your leadership and organization around that. But let's talk a little bit about you're kind of an OG in this field. You've been doing this. You were in the 90s. You were, you know, going to school, looking into this thing, you know, and I remember me too, same thing. Like, you know, I was kind of exploring this in the mid 90s and that was the safe way to talk about it was saying non-ordinary states of consciousness, right? Or altered, you know, there's all these kind of different ways that people were trying to talk about psychedelics, but they're housing it under this broader term of consciousness, right? And so we'll speak to a little bit about that. You know, it sounds like you're talking about some holotropic breath work and some music and some other things like that. What were ways did the psychedelics lead you to those? Did those lead you to the psychedelics? How did that work? And then what did you find in terms of similarities between different non-ordinary states? Because I know when we do integration, it seems like it's really a house for a lot of people talk about a lot of different things, psychedelics being one of them. So maybe expand a little bit more on non-ordinary states for folks.
Yeah, I think for myself personally, the places that I've explored non-ordinary states throughout my entire life, even while young, without even realizing that's what I was doing, was through music and through breath work. So for me, I was a flute player since I was 7 years old. I was a swimmer since I was, I don't know how old, very young, right? Really like it really into those things, not just I enjoyed them, but like really like competitively, like studied, you know, was on teams and, you know, all kinds of symphonies and And so I was exploring non-ordinary states, both through music and breath. And it's so funny because when I look back on it now, I have these moments of awareness where I'm like, oh, that's what that was. Oh, when I was like singing in my backyard, so connected to the earth, like on the swing set. And I can remember specifically this moment of time where like everything completely connected for me. It was a deeply spiritual experience that was happening through breath and music because I was singing. And when I look back and I see those connection points for me, they were all around nature, breath, and music. And so it sort of was a natural progression in that way, but much out of my awareness. I mean, I ended up going to Naropa because I discovered this thing called music therapy. I didn't have to decide between getting a psychology degree or doing a music degree. I got to do music therapy, a combination of the two, right? So I kind of ended up there in kind of a strange way, but obviously was meant to be, because I was really able to go into those things much deeper. So for example, I did an internship, practicum and internship at the Children's Hospital in Denver. And one of the things that I did there was helping children deeply sick, children with serious health issues, deal with pain management through music and through breath. And, you know, sometimes I would go into some really serious procedures that they were doing. And we would use music or we would use meditation or we would use breath to kind of help help them through these really painful procedures that sometimes they had to go through. And a lot of trance, like a lot of drumming, a lot of like trance states individually or both in groups. I did a lot of that work. So yeah, that's kind of how I've incorporated those.
Yeah, it's great to hear too about music and breath. And I never really thought about it. Like, wouldn't it be great to do holotropic breath work for kids in high school band? To realize like, oh, because I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah, I played trumpet as well, you know, and it's like I was always constantly working with breath and sound. But yes. Not realizing like, oh, wait, this is, if I just focus a little bit more, this would be kind of like holotropic breath, right?
So telling you, it's powerful. And then you're in like a band or you're in an orchestra or a symphony and everyone's playing and you're getting in these altered states with both the breath and the music. I mean, it's really powerful. Yeah.
So tell me, so for folks that aren't really too familiar with holotropic breathwork, maybe could you explain a little bit about what that is and kind of what the intention is for that, or what's sort of the end result in terms of non-ordinary states? I guess there's no end result, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So as I understand it, as I learned about it, it is because when the psychedelics started, like LSD specifically, there was a lot of research going on, right? Stan Grof, a lot of research happening with LSD and therapy in non-ordinary states, and that became inaccessible due to the drug war. Then they still wanted to continue this really miraculous, wonderful work with non-ordinary states. And so they sort of, I don't know, you know, where they got the information from. Maybe they were already working with it. I'm not sure. But then they developed this thing called holotropic breathwork. So it's a pattern, a series of patterns of breathing that get people into non-ordinary states. And what's really interesting about it is there's a lot of breath work out these days, with all kinds of different kinds of breath work and breath work practitioners. I think a lot of them are what I call activating breath work, which are, the breath of fire, right? In Kundalini yoga, it's very activating. It's like using the breath to activate the body, right? And then there's certain patterns that you can do, like holotropic breath work, where you actually are breathing a pattern into a non-ordinary state. So it is not as powerful as a non-ordinary state, I would say, than a psychedelic. But it is a pretty interesting non-ordinary state. And then it's a way of activating, right? People ask me now, well, how come I don't do holotropic breath work now? And I just say, well, because I can work with psychedelics. That's usually what I say. I'm like, I find it to be a better tool. Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe it just what from what I see or how I work with it, it seems like a better tool. But but I will tell you, I've had some really powerful work with holotropic breath work personally. And I don't think it was always done in a way that recognizes that it can be a powerful non-ordinary state. And it also requires preparation and integration and some care around it. I don't think people often think about that.
Yeah. When I've only done it a few times, and I remember the first time that I did it, I was, I was like, breathing, same thing. Like, oh, I do psychedelics with breathing. What are you talking about? How is that going to do anything for me, right? And the person, to her credit, was like, just do it until you're surprised. And I was like, all right, that's legit. I can try that. And if it doesn't work, then whatever. So it took me a while. And it was like watching the layers of Jung. At first, I was like, this is stupid, or this is frustrating, or I'm just making noise, and who's that making noise over there? And oh, maybe I'm sleepy, and am I hungry, and why am I agitated? Just like watching the layers like peel off. And it took me a long time to get into that space. But then all of a sudden, like, and this is the weird side about it too, right? As you probably know, like your fingers kind of do like this, and face kind of does like this, because you got all that oxygen in your body and it's trying to like deal with it. And then all of a sudden you like stop breathing for periods of time. You've got so much in you that like, and then you have to like realize that you're breathing. And then all of a sudden it was this like, it's almost like oneironautic, right? Like dream instead of psychonautic, it's oniro, like dream spaces, right? And then, man, I had a powerful experience. I was definitely surprised, and I didn't expect that at all, especially because, here I am, I was thinking I was doing, this was like when I was doing some ayahuasca ceremony in like 2000. And so it was like ayahuasca breathwork every other night or every couple nights, and so I was like, oh, how is this going to be, even stand up to ayahuasca? And I was like, okay, wow, there's something to be said here. I haven't really spent a lot of time practicing it since then, but it definitely was something that was surprising me very much going into these sort of deep memories. And I ended up like, I think I looked, when I woke up, like looked around the room and everyone else had already gone. I'd just been gone. It took me so long to get down through the onion that when I got there, then I really was in there for a while and everyone else had already left the room. I was like, wow, all right, I guess that works, so
It's
surprisingly things work.
surprising, isn't it? Yeah, it really surprises you.
Especially just like air, something that's around us all the time, that it's ironic too, because as you probably know, one of the probably most consistent, basic yet like super profound experiences I have in my psychedelic world sometimes is breathe. Every time I've had that, just that one word come out, breathe. What are you missing? Breathing. Breathe better. Breathe, like that was just such, and so then to like actually work with breath in this way, I think was really, really amazing. So yeah, that's good to hear that, and kind of hear how people are exploring these non-ordinary states when they're stuck with this idea around this law and this legal area. And again, sort of go back into what you were speaking about with sort of, you've been doing this for a long time, and maybe we can just go a little bit into, it's a much different world now than it was in the 90s, right? What are some things that you're seeing now that are better or more challenging or difficult, or things that you're like, hey, youngsters, maybe we can try to put on our grandma and grandpa's hats, like I'll go ahead and say like, hey, but here's some things to be aware of, or here's some things to be cautious around, or do you think everything's going as it should be, and how do you see kind of the terrain out there right now?
There, it's such a complex question. I could answer that a lot of ways. One thing that I see, well, a couple things. One, I'll address first is that I feel like everybody and their mother right now is like a psychedelic therapist or a medicine person or whatever. It's like this takes a long time, right? That kind of work takes a very, very, very long time. And I think there it's a little bit of a dangerous place that people are led into sometimes. With people who maybe probably shouldn't be holding space for medicine work. So I think that's one really big one. And I see this both on the regulated end and the unregulated end, right? Because I see in like the wild, wild west of the unregulated end, we see people just doing whatever, right? Like any, like I literally seen people overnight have some interest in psychedelics and then claim, no joke, claim that they're a psychedelic therapist like the next day. Like this, I see this all the time, right? Or people who do like a little bit of, a little bit of a training or get, take a couple classes or have a psychedelic experience and then feel like they want to do that. So that's like the unregulated side. And then there's also an incredible, both therapeutic and spiritual folks on the unregulated end who really laid the groundwork for most of the, what's happening now, right? So I you see both of it. And then you see both on the regulated side, because on the regulated side, what I see are people with all the credentials leading and training other people with credentials to do the work, but most of them have little to no experience. And so, you know, particularly like if we're looking at, you know, Colorado or Oregon, it's like these training programs and you have to have these qualifications to teach in the training program or to get licensed. But most of the people, I think, I mean, this is my guess from this point, most of the people that are going to have licenses or already hold licenses are probably people with the least experience doing medicine work.
Right. I think that's something Standroff said, is that the people with licenses are probably the least likely to break the law. So therefore, the least experienced in the area that they need to be experienced, you know.
Exactly. And the ones who are kind of taking hold and running in the medicalized and the legalized models. Yeah. So I think that's really concerning. Again, on both ends, inexperience is not a great friend in medicine work, in leading others through medicine work. So. Right. I think that maybe is the biggest thing. And also, the commercialization. I mean, that's I kind of get a little cringy with like the commercialization. Like the commercialization of like the pharmaceuticals and the commercialization of people's mushroom brands. And like, no disrespect, I think there's some value to pharma. I think there's some value to people growing mushrooms and, you know, but it's just an avenue that like I really don't have any interest in, and all the community work that I do tries to stay away from that as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it seems like there's such a rush towards capitalization on it that oftentimes they'll either be cutting of corners or just people that don't understand the basic ethos or the depth of the experiences or why people are feeling a certain way or, you know, thinking that they can direct it or put it in a box. And I think all of us that are out there, you, myself included, Rachel, and everyone else listening, I'm sure knows that you can't really put these in a box. You have to, you know, at least have to have the top open because there's going to be something to spill over, and you can't be like, no, it's got to get back in there. Right. So I think that's something that you see with these sort of controlled studies. And you're even seeing that with, you know, what's happened with the FDA trials and everything, even like the box of science. Psychedelics has been like, no. Placebo? No, we're not going to do that. We don't do placebo. You're going to know exactly when you're going to have your experience. So that really, I mean, I think that's what's so fascinating about some of this work, is it really is going to force a new conversation around how do we do FDA trials if there's this thing that is going to go up against some of these, you know, methodological design issues, you know, like the placebo, like the expectancy, all these types of things. And how are you going to get, people that can, with these small subject samples and, you know, with these protocols and, you know, with these different types of ways that people are looking at this, you're not going to be able to get the standardization that you're hoping for.
Right.
You know, and that's another thing that, you know, again, these models. So what is mental health? You know, is mental health this standardized thing that you take this, that helps you with this to do this thing? Or is it like, oh, actually there's this complex system that we're connected with.
Yeah.
And, you know, this complex system includes, like you said earlier, feeling isolated. So community groups are good for that, or integration, or these different types of things. So what are the ways that we can kind of look at this in a broader spectrum for mental health versus it just being like, this is good for depression because it helps with XYZ thing, right? So right. So that's I think is really important. And so kind of to tie into that, you're speaking earlier about these community groups, these community gatherings, how that really help people that are feeling isolated and alienated. I noticed that as well with our Erie groups. You know, when we do the integration circles, you get 10 or 15 people that would come that are like, I don't have anyone to talk to about this stuff, you know? And so who do I go to talk to? Maybe it's changed now, but at that point in time, we were doing this in 2011, people were like, I'm not going to a therapist to talk about this. You know, I'm not going to talk about this strange, weird experience where I was God, and then I spoke to these entities, and then I, like, you know, turned inside out, and they're like, oh, yeah, I've got something for you. Just give me some medicine for that, right? So people were trying to find ways to, like, be okay with this, to share with others in a space where they're a little bit hesitant around some of the status quo, that's the new word I'm kind of coining, right? The psychosis of the status quo is getting you in a box, which helps you fit into the cultural sort of thing.
Right.
And blow us out. So when you started doing these community groups, when you started doing integration, what are some things that you kind of saw coming out, or what are some of the things that people were expressing what ways were you feeling like it was really helping the community as you're growing? This was in like the early 2000s that you're doing this, or 2010s?
Yeah, the community groups didn't start till 2017.
Okay, that's right.
Hold on, I gotta I got to get my computer before it dies. Hold on, give me one second. Something's happening. Oh, I see the problem. Okay, good. So yeah, I think one of the biggest things is like, oh my God, we can have these conversations above ground. Like we can, you know, and that was the whole point of like starting this Michigan Psychedelic Society. There was no above ground group like this happening in my area, right? We had seen that in other places. In other states even, but it really wasn't happening in my area. And it was a pretty big deal to just kind of say, hey, we're going to have this discussion. You know, would you like to come talk about psychedelics? And literally didn't know if it was just going to be me and the friend that said they would come. You know, like maybe there'd be two of us, but we had 30 people. We filled the room. We had to move out of that space within a couple months because we had just exceeded the capacity of our initial starting point. People were really excited to share their experiences, to have these conversations, to network with other people, to find other people to sit for them, to, you know, it's like there's this really special thing that happens every time we sit down when we call some psychedelic group together, whether that's an integration group or a community group or a whatever, an event, a talk, a speaker, a movie. There is something, and I know that you see this, and this is a really unique thing, is that we cut through the bullshit just to even start. Like people actually show up in their very authentic state, or they realize really soon after we start that we are just being authentic, right? We're just showing up and expressing our opinions and thoughts and beliefs and experiences as they are, and people aren't attacking us for it. And like you said, it's like, yeah, you can't go to your therapist or doctor, or, you know, maybe a little bit more these days, but still in some places questionable, and have any discussion like this at all. It's like, you are going to get labeled, you're going to get diagnosed, you are going to get medications prescribed, you know, it's really going to be a problem. That stuff's going to go on your insurance and, you know, on your medical records. And I mean, that stuff is really scary. So here we are in these spaces where I can actually talk about what my LSD experience was like, my DMT experience, my psilocybin experience. And somebody else in the room might say, oh my God, you just described something I have been trying to put in words for a really long time. Whoa, I had a similar experience. I had a, you know, or even if somebody had a difficult experience, and the folks who, you know, those of us who know what those difficult experiences are like, can really be like, oh my goodness, wow, you know, yes, I've been there. Those are so hard. Let's talk about it. You know, like it seems, I mean, I don't know that anything is truly judgment free, but it seems closer to that than any other spaces that I've been in.
And it feels like it's experimental too, in the sense that, like you're saying, like people are like hunting for words. We're trying to, like, you know, I think we talked about some in our last podcast or previous one about, we're trying to, you know, un-F the ineffable, right? Is there whatever? Yes. We're trying to un-F it because we don't know what is this word, but like, I've been trying to like conceptualize it, and somebody else says it. It's like, ah, oh, that's exactly how it is, you know? And so you're like getting words and you're flipping them around and you're trying to like talk about this in bigger sort of phrases or metaphors or whatever else to kind of get this sort of other space that we don't have words for. And so just even having a place to like banter about that is fantastic, yeah. You know, because I think that does, like, you have that word and now you're like, okay, now you're feeling felt, you're feeling seen. You know, that's what they say, that Jung said something like, being alone doesn't mean that you're by yourself. It means you can't talk to other people about things that are important to you.
Yes, exactly. I love that. That's exactly right. Yeah. And then people can come to these groups and kind of, you know, figure out where is my niche in this group? Like, so for example, Michigan Psychedelic Society, we started off as just, let's get together and talk, but then we started getting little individual purposes. And it was like, oh, folks that want to talk about policy, let's go over here. Let's form this group, you know? Oh, folks that want to talk about like harm reduction or safe and responsible use, let's go over here. Oh, folks that want to do integration, let's go here, right? And people really were able to kind of find, even like, because it turned out to, we ended up getting bigger and bigger. So we would have 75 to 100 people show up at some of our events sometimes, right? So then having these smaller groups to kind of break off into and doing them in different cities became really, really important. And what a special group, what a special community that we have created over the years of showing up for each other and with each other.
Yeah, and it seems, I mean, Michigan, you know, you have a quite a few powerhouses there. I know that from your original policy team, you had, you know, when Kalindi was involved and Mudu was involved and a bunch of other folks, the Detroit Psychedelic Society, other people out there in Michigan that were really sort of well versed in this, you know. So speak to that, even just like Michigan as sort of a very interesting incubator that you wouldn't expect to be so like Ann Arbor with, you know, the $5, you know, penalty for her cannabis for so long when the first. So speak to the energy of Michigan and that space and Detroit and all the stuff that's going on there in terms of helping to build that community that was just about getting together and sort of really sort of meeting each other.
Yeah, I really feel like these movements have been the catalyst for those powerhouses to get together. Like, that's how I feel. It started with the cannabis movement, right? And unfortunately, in the cannabis movement, it started because of a wrongdoing, right? A police wrongdoing that kind of, brought everybody together. And in some ways, the same thing with the psychedelic movement, aside from it was just the policies being in themselves being the wrongdoing, as opposed to any specific event that brought us together. But one of the things I realized after starting Michigan Psychedelic Society is that, like, well, I acknowledge that, we didn't bring psychedelics to Michigan. That would be really dumb to think that, but there was underground groups, right, that were existing, and without being advertising. So how do you know, right? Unless you're keyed into that group. And the Detroit psychedelic community was definitely a big one that I realized not long into my adventures, that this was a really, really decade-long community group that has not completely revolved around psychedelic mushrooms, but martial arts and community building and psychedelics. And so tapping into that community, realizing that that was happening, was a big eye opener. It was like, oh my God, there's so much here that I didn't even realize, right? And then I honestly do think that, like, cannabis sort of built the activist framework in that way, where there was already really an incredible, and I mean absolutely incredible, grassroots cannabis activists. And really, what I consider that we did was continue their work, right? And so we're talking about, like, things that started in Ann Arbor in the 60s, I think it was, the group of the White Panthers. Is that what you were going to say?
I was just speaking more to the policy shift, but yeah, maybe it started before then with the White Panthers and such, you know,
Yeah,
the
because the story of Hash Bash, we're on the 52nd year of Hash Bash. Hash Bash, the movement, the cannabis decriminalization movement started, right? At that point, right? 52, maybe 53 years ago. We're about to have another anniversary Hash Bash coming
Yeah,
up here.
for
So,
folks that aren't familiar with that, because there might be people out there that don't know the Ann Arbor. I'm from Michigan and went to school in Michigan in Ann Arbor, so I'm familiar with this, but I know a lot of people aren't there. So there's this thing called Hash Bash, and there's this thing that sort of catalyzed Hash Bash. Maybe just touch on that real briefly.
So as I understand it, John Sinclair was arrested with a joint, and was facing like a 10-year prison sentence or something. And the folks in the area were like, we're going to get together on, in Ann Arbor. I think it started on the Diag, I think, which is a center point outside area of University of Michigan campus. We're going to protest. Hey, we're having a protest, right? I think the Beatles wrote a song about John Sinclair and this protest. And that's how it started. And each year, everyone just continued to come back. And so Hash Bash is a protest, and it continues to be a protest to this day, even though we have medicalization of cannabis and we have legalization of cannabis, right? The folks are continuing trying to strip the rights away of cannabis users, of plant medicine users in general. And so it's a constant upkeep. The Michigan cannabis community continues its work on a very active basis. Governor Whitmer just said that she's going to increase the cannabis tax by three times. And so this is, so this year, I think, it's going to be like, first of all, let's get these cannabis prisoners out of jail and prison. Let's not keep punishing cannabis users here, right? The recreational market is not everybody's not the local grassroots community favorite here. We rely really heavily on our caregiver. We have caregivers in the state of Michigan where you can partner with a caregiver or be your own caregiver and grow your own plants and make your own products and or have someone do that for you that's not in the licensed market. And we have to fight for our right regularly to keep the caregiver movement going, because the powers that be in Big Canna, right, don't want that. And they're going to keep trying to make more money with their dispensaries and keep trying to take our human rights away. And so it just continues. So we have continued the work of the cannabis movement that really started in Michigan, to my knowledge, 53 years ago, at least as I understand is documented.
Yeah, I think one of the oldest spaces in the U.S. that has the decrim policy regarding cannabis. So for a while it was $5 fine. When I was going to school, there $50 penalty or something like that. But you know, why even have a penalty? But either way, you know, it's pretty groundbreaking for that. Do you think it was the cannabis movement that inspired people to be more plant oriented, or do you think there's something unique in terms of the Michigan archetype? What's the Michigan archetype that allowed for this to kind of evolve? Because I think then we can kind of go into decrim nature Ann Arbor and kind of what happened there. But what do you see as sort of the values and ethos and the approach that people in Michigan have towards this work?
Yeah, I don't think cannabis was sort of the thing that ignited the love of plant medicine. I think that is separate. I think what cannabis was able to do was form a foundation, a framework for how to turn this into something that could be decriminalized or potentially medicalized or legalized or whatever. But the psychedelic movement and specific plant medicine movement here, yeah, goes way beyond cannabis. I think it's interesting, like, you know, Ann Arbor is a college town. It's quite progressive, right? And so I think it's a friendly place for something like that. But Michigan in general, there's a lot of free thinkers in Michigan. I know Midwest is, you know, it's a little sleepy kind of Midwest place in some areas. But there's a lot of nature connection here. Right. We have the cities, but outside of the cities, we have the Great Lakes. We have national forests. Like we have mountains, you know, we have a lot of different
sand dunes.
Exactly. Like there's a really strong nature connection here. And I think the underground networks are powerful networks. I want to keep saying that, like, yeah, we created an above ground network to kind of bring some light to this in a way that would fertile the ground for the potential of it maybe being more acceptable and potentially being decriminalized, right? But the underground network here is really, really strong. And this stuff has been going on for long before I was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, definitely. There's something about the freethinker, you know, sovereign being sort of mentality. They're just like, why is the government telling me what to do? I want to be able to connect with my plants and mushrooms. You really see that, you know, because when you look at sort of the U.S. in general, like the main spots are Washington, California, Michigan, and Massachusetts. And Michigan is like really, you know, probably has, well, now just because of the recent passing in Washington, I think you dip down a little bit, maybe that change again with the new city coming up in the future. Somebody fighting between second and third, we have like 1.2 million people that have been affected by the policy across the state of Michigan right now. Mm-hmm. And I think just below California in terms of population wise. So that really speaks to an incredible, just grassroots movement that you have going out there, that so many people in so many different places are able to make this happen. And then the city councils are open to it.
Yeah.
That we've gone to, city councils maybe have not really been too open to it. But although I will say East Lansing, unfortunately, maybe not so much, but we're going to still try and get people. Yeah. So take me through, because for me, you know, when I look at the movement in general, Ann Arbor was so critical. Just like even, you know, because what happened is we had our thing going, you know, Oakland passed, Santa Cruz passed, Chicago pretend passed for a day, which I think was a good little blip for a second, but then that kind of pulled back. And then it was for a little bit, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
And everything kind of shut down. Like all city council members all over the place were saying, we have other priorities, we got to work on this. That was why Chicago couldn't get any further, anything else like that. And you all in Ann Arbor were like, screw it, we're already meeting.
Right.
Do this. And for me, I was like, oh, this is great, because, you know, my first mushroom experiences were in Ann Arbor. So, you know, this is perfect for me. So I really enjoyed watching the development of your team out there and helping out as much as I could because of this sort of connection I had as well. But maybe speak to this in terms of what was going through your minds, or how were you thinking about this? And like, what kind of process happened for you when you sort of built up the Decrim Nature Ann Arbor team and then, made it happen in a time when most people were like, we're not even you know.
Yeah. So, you know, to kind of go back in my timeline just a little bit, right? I'm meeting with clients individually. I'm having these conversations with them about psychedelics. And I realize, not only do I realize these folks are isolated, but I also realize the conversation that we're having also puts both of us at risk, mm-hmm. right? And so part of the reason of forming this, you know, community group for me, even, you know, while it wasn't super present at the beginning, was to work towards changing policy about these things so that we can have safer use, right? And so that had been built into the mission of Michigan Psychedelic Society. And while our focus at that point was all the in-person meetings, because we did a lot of in-person meetings and it was building community, that was the focus. We still had these sub focuses, right, that we were still building. And so we had already built, we had just built, I think, I'm not sure the exact timeline, but I want to say like, maybe it was August or September of 2019. I'm trying to think of like the whole COVID pandemic started in early 2020.
March 2020, I think, when they
started. Yeah. Well, it was fall as we were starting. We got the board together for Decriminalized Nature Ann Arbor. So we had been working on this, right? And it was just sort of in place at that point. We're in the beginnings of working on it. And really when the COVID shutdowns happened, really perfect timing because we already had the board. We had the framework of what we wanted to do already with the name Decriminalized Nature Michigan. We had all of that stuff moving forward already. I think Larry's still there, right, Rachel?
Wait, can you see me?
Okay. Oh yeah, there you are. Okay. I think you were frozen. Maybe you were just perfectly still. I'm not even sure. And then the COVID shutdowns happened. And so we just, you know, our community meetings were really hard to move online. We did some of those online. It just wasn't the same. Our thing was in-person community, but what could continue to happen was decrim. And so we continued to meet and we continued to, you know, get our community involved and we continued to have community members reaching out to their city council. We had already started engaging with city council, by the way, before the COVID shutdown. There were some in-person meetings that we had. But then it all went online at one point, but we didn't stop. We were actually like, oh, we all have a lot of time on our hands right now. So let's keep going. And I think that at the beginning of COVID certainly is probably when we were about ready to talk with city council. And we did realize initially there's some emergency states of things going on that they're just not gonna, you know, they're not gonna respond. But we really just gave it a couple weeks, to be honest with you. We were like, all right, let them deal, you know, let them respond to the emergency situation and we're gonna keep at it. And they were responsive to us keeping at it. Mm-hmm. And it was just really beautiful timing.
Right. And it speaks a little bit even about, I'm not sure if they're all still on the city council there at all, but I remember reading the first couple articles and there's somebody on the, that was quoted in one of the newspaper articles, like, oh, this is going to be that white rabbit, you know, song and this is going to, you know, bring us back to this. And just some very kind of conservative members of your city council that were, you know, kind of against this. And then through the educational work that you all did out there and everything else, that you had a unanimous decision, you know, getting everybody on board, which I think is really impressive too. So, yeah, what do you think is some good tips for people out there that are looking to talk to their city council in terms of how to approach city council members, how to really sort of pitch this to them in a way that that they can hear it, even if they're someone that's a little bit more conservative or against the idea?
Yeah, this was pretty interesting because that article was so sad. Like, you know, it really like turned our movement into this really weird like propaganda, like the thing that we were moving against, which is like the, you know, the propaganda of psychedelics from the 60s and 70s. But I can't remember that person's name. They're not on city council anymore. And they were like the thorn in the side of the cannabis movement here in Ann Arbor. This was like somebody they could not get on board no matter what avenue they took to try to engage in talks about cannabis with this particular city council member, they just would not budge. And what's really funny is because a lot of the people that we were working with were people who know the city council members through the cannabis movement. They were like, don't even bother. Like, it is going to upset you to even go have a conversation with this person. Like, don't even address them. We addressed every other city council member. We still sent them things. You know, they were still part of when we sent educational materials to the whole council, they were included, but we had no constituents go talk to this person. We never approached them one time, and we just assumed they were going to be a dissenting vote. And what's really funny in the end, when we had the vote, so we didn't actually care what that person was voting or not. And again, like, we just ignored them. And in the end, what's so funny, what they said during the vote, I remember, was it was either in a newspaper article or at the actual city council meeting. I think it actually was at the actual city council meeting. She said, well, I was noticing that, I don't remember what stock had, well, Psilocybin Company had just released some, you know, on the public, you know, market, that all of a sudden there was some, like, you know, some financial interest all of a sudden that piqued her. Oh, well, this must be something because now it's on the NASDAQ or whatever. And that turned her vote into a yes. And it was just like, right. Nobody could believe it.
Yeah, no joke. Huh? Well, that was quite a journey there. It was really impressive to have you sort of, again, push that through. I think once you did that, it, like, started the acceleration for all the other cities. Yeah. Everyone else was like, oh, we can do this. And now we're like, oh, we can use this as even a conversation around COVID, and people are depressed and have anxiety and, you know, working with substances and substance issues, et cetera, et cetera. And this can be really helpful for that. So watching, I think what you all did there really helped spark a lot more cities to get things going. And now there's how many cities in Michigan have passed? About six or seven now? Six?
I think it's five or six and a county.
Okay.
And then we're working on Jackson, Michigan right now, that I think is very likely to pass in the next couple months here.
That's great. That sounds great. Yeah. That's amazing. Hopefully they'll continue to keep moving that forward, but really, thank you. And, you know, for all your work there, because I think that was the big part of this overall national movement was what you all did in Ann Arbor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you, Larry, because without your guys' support, I don't know that would have happened. Mm. You guys were an incredible resource and support. I mean, you were with us the whole entire time. And especially since it was ended up being all online, you could really participate with us in all the ways that we were participating, right?
That was the one benefit of the COVID for me. It was like, now I was able to get into all the city council meetings, talk with people, and everyone's doing there. So in a way, you know, everyone learned how to use Zoom. Okay, great, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then from there was also a couple other things that you all did. You did a month, right? So the entire month of September.
Yes.
Also, your anniversary is on September, also right around 9/20 day. So you did an entire month of Entheogenic Plant Awareness Month. And then I think you also, I don't know if you want to jump into this at all, but there's also now sort of a co-founded EntheoFest, which is also kind of continuing on. So there's all this other stuff that kind of happened, emerged from that. Maybe speak to that, sort of the energy that win brought forth, so other people in their cities can realize, like, wait, it's not just decrim. We got a lot more to do afterwards.
Oh my goodness. And I say this a lot when folks are, like, you know, talking about, you know, having a decriminalized movement in their area, is like, we started a movement that included decriminalization, but our movement was a community-based movement, right? And so that's really what we were doing, is the goal wasn't like, okay, how do we decriminalize so that we can create businesses and make money, right? Which I think, unfortunately, can be the goal for people. But it was like, how do we create a really wonderful community? How do we provide safe and accessible access for everybody? How do we create something much, much bigger that has these different components of the things that we're talking about, right? That's a much bigger thing. That's talking with public health. That's talking with politicians. That's talking with community. That's talking with, you know, oh my goodness, everybody, you know, that's trying to get everybody involved. It's so much bigger than any one of those areas. And so it has exploded in this area, in Michigan, in terms of what's available, There's festivals, you know, Entheofest, which I'm not part of anymore. But I helped get Entheofest going and did that for a few years. We have all kinds of city groups, decriminalized nature city groups happening. We have, now there are a lot of psychedelic community groups and psychedelic societies happening all over the state. I mean, it has really just like, you know, it's really like the background picture. It's just like, ooh, you know, has really spread like mycelium or like sun rays, you know, all over the state. And it's really beautiful to see. And while I say all over the state, I would say, you know, even throughout the Midwest, because I'm meeting with people now in the Midwest that are like, you guys really inspired us to get moving. And now I think they might be farther ahead in some ways in statewide movements, you know, than we are. So it's been beautiful to see all that has come out of this work.
Yeah, I think there's such an important thing to have these sort of like the news ripples, right? Like here in California or in Colorado, everyone's like, oh yeah, Colorado, oh yeah, San Francisco or Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area, whatever. It's easy to write them off, right? Mm-hmm. When you all did that there, you got the news ripple into places like Indiana and Ohio and, you know, Minnesota and you know, Wisconsin. So there's teams in all those places. I think probably the one that's doing really most work right now, it seems like Bloomington is really stepping up in terms of local cities out there, but there's so many cities. Chicago has a whole bunch of co-sponsors now, are still looking for the final sponsor, but they've restarted that team up and it's ready to go. So, you know, I think that's, again, all the work you're doing there. And I often hear that Michigan's Midwest, but there's something about those Great Lakes, really, Great Lakes bioregion, I think I prefer to call it, because it's Midwesty. But, you know, I mean, Rachel's also from Toronto area, so, you know, kind of give some love to the Great Lakes there, because, you know, I think there's something about that flow, that in and out, that sort of that water as well, and nature and all that, like you're saying, that really helps to sort of catalyze that. So it's really fun to see what's going on there locally. We have about 10 more minutes and maybe just another couple questions, but maybe I'll ask you a couple other things sort of while you're there. You know, we all kind of had, you know, maybe we just get into this sort of, because I think this is always fun to talk with people about, we had all these really big, weird, unusual experiences. Is there one experience that you've had that you really tapped into that have been like, wow, that insight really was profound for me and has been, however it was, a really big part of how I view things now, or it shifted my worldview in such a way that now I get it in a different kind of way and I approach everything from this viewpoint? Is there anything that you can kind of think of that's been helpful in your personal experiences?
Yeah, I think a lot of little ones, but I think the biggest one that I think about was an experience I had in probably 2020. 2019. Now I'm realizing it was maybe before decriminalization. So now I'm going backwards. Anyway, I'm not sure exactly when it was, but it was the biggest and most profound psychedelic experience that I had. And where I really truly felt like I went into that universal consciousness, where I completely lost the body for a period of time, and went into the energetic realm. And that experience, actually, part of the integration of that experience I've already mentioned to you guys today, which was me going back in time in my childhood, remembering moments and different ways that I might have gotten there through non-medicine. So it actually was like a hugely, deeply spiritual experience that I realized was tied in through my whole life and wasn't just an awakening that happened that day, but it kind of, the timeline went both forward and backward. And it was like, oh, I'm tapping into something. Oh, that's what that is. I'm tapping into something here. And what's so cool about that, this is what I talk about with clients all the time, is that like, it's not about psychedelic experience necessarily. Like psychedelics is a tool that helped me go to that really profound state and that state of awareness, but it helped me understand that this is happening to me all the time without medicine, right? So it helped me tap into both spirituality, not just from like the experience that I'm having on this, you know, this lifetime that I'm in now, but also my religious background. I was raised Jewish. And so it kind of gave me a little bit more of a deep dive into Jewish spirituality, but all the world religions and anything that's not a world religion, and just like the connection of what oneness, of what unity and what energetic levels with or without the body. So it really was a catalyst into a different understanding or a different seeing things differently in a way that my very physical dual world with my five senses was sort of preventing me from seeing or understanding more clearly.
Yeah, there's something about the expansion of your state outside of what's in our heads to this, you know, transpersonal or whatever you want to call it, the conscious beyond, non-ordinary state, like whatever, that something about that that taps into religion, that taps into spirituality, that taps into this feeling of oneness, that taps into this interconnectedness. And it's like, it's almost like this is our division. And then once we get outside of that, we realize like, oh, wait, look at all these connections somehow. Like,
right.
Keeps us, you know, or whatever, our body keeps us in this different space, but this beyond space, super profound. Yeah.
Exactly. And that I think for me is like, that's the ability to liberate, like that's the liberation. It's like liberation of this very physical dual state with all these restrictions and limitations and boxes, like you were talking about before. Like the liberation is the awareness, right? That we're not stuck. That's the liberation.
Yeah, great. Awesome. So Rachel, do you have one question for us or comment? And then we'll jump in, and any last thoughts you have or anything you want to sort of tie up or any ideas you want to share or websites you want to link us to, we'll talk about that in just a second.
Totally. What a great chat, Julie. I love the music aspect of it. So I had a few nice comments just about just this idea of music therapy and also just psychedelics in conjunction with that. My question is just from a perspective of like, I come from a dance background. I used to do like musical theater, all of that kind of stuff. So when you're talking about, you know, those states of being when you're just playing, when you're just like freestyling, you're just in flow, where do you go, right? You're in that space no different than in like that psychedelic world, at least to me. And so like when you were talking about them, I'm like, yeah, that's, I vibe with that. And so my question for you is that if it's so difficult, I find, to have words to talk about these experiences, but sometimes you'll hear a song or a tune and you're like, wow, that's what it feels like to be there. So I'm just wondering, for you, has there been a tune, a song, anything that from that realm that you felt like you, as like in your own unique lens, it's like your call to pull that down here and anchor it in for others? Or is there some sort of message that comes through in not necessarily words, but in music? Because music literally has keys in it, right? So yeah, anything to share from that perspective?
Great question. Wow, I love that question. There's a couple things that come to mind. One of them is when I was younger, when I talked about that moment where I realized I was singing and I was on the earth and I was actually saying a Jewish prayer, like Shema Yisrael, Shema. Oh God, I'm going to mess it up.
I was singing the prayer. As you were saying that. Oh, that's so crazy.
And the prayer is, we are one. That's literally the prayer. Oh. It's like, yeah, we are one. And when I, you know, when I go to synagogue, it's like, it was played on this organ. It was like, it was so intense. And I was in the choir. So I was always singing.
Me too.
Oh, really?
I was raised Catholic. So, but
yeah. Oh. Yeah,
I know. Like, so when you're singing along with everybody, you're singing a hymn or something.
And yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And the words were literally like, we are one, we are one. And that it's so fascinating. So that one comes through really strong. And that was that has really stuck with me. Another one that I think about is I went to Interlochen, which is a school and camp in northern Michigan for music and drama and theater. Oh, yes. And yeah, your fans and all of that. And I remember the final concert that we did. We were doing Franz Liszt's Les Preludes, and it's over 100 people. It's like an all camp symphony, and it's the final thing that we do. And it was such a moment of profoundness with that many people playing music together, a culmination of months of work. It was a really, really powerful moment. I think those two really stick out for me.
And yeah. You're outside, I guess, for that concert as well.
Right? Yeah, outside.
The stars, like, oh,
yes.
Love that. Thank you for sharing that. That was, I wanted to get that because I do feel like that is a psychedelic experience, right? To
Yeah.
have that moment like shared on stage, like with everyone that you've worked so hard with, and to sing, like I did Les Mis, and so when you sing that last song of like, what do you hear the people sing, and all together, like, and then the curtain falls and it's just like that's the end, but it's not the end, right? That's just the end of that story, and you get a perspective on what life is, that it's a beautiful cosmic story, and it's just, it's our privilege, it's our blessing to be able to take our role in it. And yeah, so thank you for
Thank you for that.
Back to you, Larry.
Appreciate it. That's great. Yeah, so I guess Julie, any last thoughts, anything you wanted to share that we didn't bring up today, any projects you're working on that you're excited about you want to tell the audience?
Yeah, let me share a couple things. We have quite a bit going on here in Michigan right now through Michigan Psychedelic Society. So right now, we have monthly meetings in various cities throughout the state, and there's other psychedelic community groups like in Kalamazoo and Detroit and Lansing and Grand Rapids, and we have a mid-Michigan group starting. So like folks who are in Michigan, get connected with your local group. There's good things happening. So there's one. We're gonna start slowly fertilizing the soil to get to another statewide movement and to continue to help cities and counties decriminalize. And so one of the ways that we're doing that is we're having a healthcare practitioner group, which is getting licensed professionals. We're creating a guidebook for other licensed professionals to figure out how can I safely talk about these things and giving them actual factual good information to share with clients. We want good information out there, and we want people to be able to talk to their healthcare practitioners and their therapists. And so we're creating a guidebook so that both patients, clients, people, and practitioners feel more comfortable. So we're working on that. We're doing a monthly leadership call for psychedelic community leaders throughout Michigan to keep, again, getting the soil more fertile for a statewide push at some future point. We have a Midwest psychedelic leader collaboration that just started through Michigan Psychedelic Society. And that is the places that you mentioned, Larry, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. And leaders of those movements are doing now monthly calls to help support each other and share information. And so that's really wonderful. We have the Entheo Cup. We just announced the 2025 Entheo Cup. So it's going to be a competition of submissions for edibles and microdoses and fruits, fruiting bodies. We're going to have an actual event this year, which is going to be in August in Detroit, August 23rd. And then we have the Community Steward Award. So we're going to give Michigan Psychedelic Community Steward Award. So people who are doing good work in the community, a way to honor them. So we have some really cool things coming up. So if you're in the area, please do not hesitate. You can go to our website, mipsychedelicsociety.org, and you can reach out that way, or mipsychedelicsociety@gmail.com, and you can reach out that way too.
Great. Awesome, Julie. It's such a pleasure to chat with you. As you're always doing good stuff. It's really great to hear from you, and really excited to hear all this new stuff happening in the state as well. Continuation of some great stuff there. As always, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in all the different ways. Maybe invite me. I'd love to check out one of those Midwest leadership meetings too, just to kind of check in and see
Cool.
if anyone is doing anything fun out there. That'd be good because I can actually direct some people your way as well. So yeah, let
Cool.
me know when that happens. And outside of that, look forward to chatting with you again some more soon. But really, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing with the audience. Really, it's been so great. And I look forward to maybe having another one. Rachel mentioned earlier we maybe do some long form podcasts in the future. I bet we could talk for quite a few hours and just kind of. So, really, really great to have you be here. And I just want to remind everyone that every 2 weeks we'll be going live. So the next one we're going to be having is Sunday, March 16th, and this is with special guest Reverend Dr. Pamela Dawn, who's out here in California. And next week, Sunday, this episode, I believe Sunday, will be posted on the Spotify account. Rachel's going to take care of that. So, Julie, if you want to send along any links or anything like that as well to Rachel, we can get that on the little blurb there. So thank you for being here, Julie. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening in. And until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a good day.
Plant power to the people. Plant power to the people. Wake up. where you dream is where I'll meet you.